Hi, I'm Katrina Daniel, and welcome to Primetime Crime, a podcast for people who want to know what goes on behind the scenes of the most notorious trending crime stories and what's going on in the minds of those involved in those stories. What are the detectives, the judges, the defense attorneys, and the prosecutors thinking? You'll hear it all on Primetime Crime, the podcast. So this is Primetime Crime, and this is part two of my talk slash interview with psychic lawyer Mark Anthony. We just had too many questions for him and had such an interesting time talking to him that we divided our conversation into two parts. And yes, we're all over the place, but hey, that's just life. All over the place. Enjoy. Tell us about one of your most interesting, maybe fun, maybe the exact opposite cases that you can tell us about.
I was conducting a jury trial and I was a defense attorney. So I was defending this guy who he was a big bruiser. All right. He had gotten into a fight with another big bruiser at a bar. And basically my client beat the tar out of the other guy. And so in a mutual combat barroom brawl, it's not unusual for the loser to file charges. But it was still a crime of violence. And so this is the phase before the trial, before the evidence was going to be presented. This is what's known as jury selection. The technical term is voir dire, which is a French term for to speak the truth. And the point here is that the prosecution gets to ask the prospective jurors questions, and then the defense does, because we want to find if anyone has any biases. So the prosecutor is wrapping up his questions, and I'm getting ready to do mine, and I keep zeroing in on this one woman, and I'm feeling a female spiritual presence around here, and now I'm feeling this choking sensation in my throat, like I'm having a hard time breathing. And so I knew that, okay, a spirit's coming through, and I'm starting a jury trial, and this probably isn't the best time for this to be happening, but I don't always have control over who wants to get a message through. So I stand up at the podium and I say, has anyone here or anyone in your family ever been the victim of a violent crime? You know, because I had to find out, you know, this is a mm-hmm. a fist fight. Lo and behold, this tears, and she was such a sweet person. I'll never forget this. The tears rolled out of her eyes and she was trembling and she raised her hand and she said, a year ago, my sister was in a foreign country when an escaped mental patient strangled her, dismembered her body and threw her in a dumpster like she was garbage. And I'm standing here in court and I'm only out of law school like about 2 years and they didn't teach me how to deal with this one. And my client is looking at me like, dude, what are you doing? And now I'm getting a visual on the spirit and the clamping around my throat, and I'm understanding this. Literally, I had a foot in both worlds. And if your listeners want to find out what happens, they're probably going to have to get my book, Never Letting Go.
Do spirits ever get revenge on their killers? And if so, how? And if not, why the hell not?
Yeah, that's a really good question. On the other side, they see, we tend to think of spirits as invisible humans with our same foibles and hangups and neuroses and illnesses, and they're not. When the EMS, the electromagnetic soul, leaves the body, what dies is the brain and the body. And the brain is what creates ego-driven things like resentment, the desire for revenge and hatred. And so we revert to this purely energetic state. Now, certainly we remember what had happened, but I did a reading for a woman, Vicky Rios Martinez, and one of the most amazing people I've ever known. And her little boy, 11-year-old Junie Rios Martinez, had been abducted, raped, and murdered by a serial killer. And I did a reading for her and her mother came through and then Junie came through and it was really light and bright and it was just such a beautiful connection. And then another energy came through and his name was Mark Dean Schwab. I didn't know because I'd been out of state that he, when he was executed, I didn't realize he was dead. And I was like, do you want me to try to get rid of him? She says, no, I want to hear what he has to say. And Junie appeared next to him. And Junie said, he is not evil here. And now I'm trying to keep my prosecutorial, myself out of the way. And Schwab's spirit showed me his, he said, I was insane. And I felt like I was looking at a television set where the screen was all distorted. It was like static and distortion. And then it was, this is pretty heavy stuff. He started telling me how his lust was tied in with violence. It was the most vulgar and disgusting impulses a spirit had probably ever transmitted to me. But he wasn't trying to disgust me. He was explaining that now that I am here, I am no longer that. That is what died with me. And he said, I hope she can forgive me. And Vicky says, I forgive him. And I'm like, how? She said, Mark, when I went to the execution, he'd already been sedated, but I wanted him to see the forgiveness in my eyes. She said, I'm not forgiving him because I like him, but if I don't, I'm never going to be able to move forward in my life. And before he disconnected with me, I heard three other boys. And she said, when you said three other boys, she said, Mark, nobody knows this, but the police told me that Schwab is a suspect in multiple murders of boys, because at the scene of my son's murder, they found tissue and hair samples that didn't match Schwab or my son. Mm. And all I can say about Vicky Rios Martinez, I always wanted to meet a saint.
Uh-huh.
And that day, I think I did.
What is it that people want to know most from you?
I think people want validation that somebody that meant so much to them, yeah, didn't just disintegrate into nothingness.
Right.
And what evidential mediumship does by bringing forth facts and information that I couldn't possibly know, it verifies, okay, this is that spirit. And the point of spirit communication is to bring forth messages of love, healing, and resolution. Some people need closure. Some people are angry at the person who died. Some people are experiencing guilt. I have seen so many incredible messages come through. It's about healing. It's about healing.
Do you ever get vibes from people and you see someone and you just go, God, I just can't stand to be in the same space with you? You like,
well, like, I did. I was in criminal law for a long time, and I have encountered more than my fair share of sociopaths. And sociopaths send out a much different vibration than normal people. According to psychiatrists and psychologists, a sociopath is devoid of the emotion of love. And it's like they're the dark energies that walk amongst us. And the thing is, psychics, we can spot sociopaths because, yeah, we can't read them. It's like there's nothing there. I mean, there's something there, but they're devoid of love. That's how we can spot them. And the thing is, sociopaths aren't always the one in handcuffs seated at council table. Sometimes they're in the Brooks Brothers suit sitting next to the person at council table.
Mark, is there anything else that you think we would find fascinating to know other than all those things you've already told us?
I think that people need to understand, why do I do what I do? Wouldn't it have been easier for me just to continue practicing law, putting myself out there, getting subjected to public ridicule, skeptics, religious fanatics saying I'm doing the work of the devil? And I remember it was about 2 weeks after my mother passed, and I was very, very close to my mother. I got along great with my parents. And my mother and I, we used to go out to lunch and like we'd look at people's auras. I mean, it was just cool having a psychic for a mom. And people think that when you're a medium, that somehow grief bounces off of us, and it doesn't. You know, we are human beings, and we have a heightened sensitivity. They used to call us sensitives before the modern term psychic came up in the early 20th century. And so I was driving back from court. Here I am, the senior partner in a law firm, and this wave of grief hit me. So I realized, let me pull over. I got to get my act together before I walk into my office. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in this parking space. I'm sitting in my car. This flash of light goes off in my head. And I instinctively turned and I looked at the passenger seat and I saw the silhouette of my mother in the silver white light. And her voice floods my head. And she said, "Mark, you've been given the gift of mediumship so that you would not be crushed by grief. But now you must tell people who are coping with theirs." And before I could even respond, then I hear the second wave of this message. "Mark, your life mission is to help people understand that God exists, that heaven, the afterlife exists, that souls are immortal living beings, that you can communicate with souls, and that loved ones will be reunited in the light when it is your time to leave the material world." So I sink back into my chair. I mean, my seat, my car, I'm soaking wet. I mean, I'm like sweating. And all I can say is, "Okay." And I'm like, I'm a senior partner of a law firm. People are going to think that I'm insane if I start talking about this. Within a year, everything in my life changed. I started writing Never Letting Go. And then I heard from my agent it was going to be published. Then a couple of weeks after that, I was offered a job at a government agency. So the segue from private practice to this government sector, then Never Letting Go comes out. My manager, Rocky, she books me at a speaking engagement at Harvard. So here I am, it's about an hour before I'm going to speak at Harvard. I get a cell phone call and it's my boss. He's like, "You know, you're missing too much time from work on this book thing of yours." And I said, "Yeah, but I'm taking my vacation time to do this." "Well, I'm catching a lot of political flack because of having a psychic on staff." I said, "Well, according to the First Amendment, I have a right to my spiritual beliefs." "Yeah, but," I said, "here, let me make this simple for you. Please accept this as my resignation effective immediately." And he was like, "Okay, that works." And I hung up the phone and then I said, "Oh my God, Rocky, I just quit the practice of law. And this is why I hired Rocky." She said, "Mark, look around. Where are you?" I said, "Harvard." She goes, "And what are you doing in an hour?" I said, "Giving a lecture on life after death and signing copies of my new book, Never Letting Go." She said, "Don't you think you're right where you need to be?"
And that's why you hired her, and she's cool.
She is way cool.
Way
and
cool.
You know what's so funny about this, Katrina? I was talking to her on the phone earlier today, and we were talking about that. And that's what made me think about that. She says, "I remember that, Mark," because we were like, we were literally standing near this wall, and it was red brick, and there was ivy all over it, of course, Ivy League. And there was this little fountain, and we were right down the street from where I was going to be speaking. And it was a chilly November day, and all the Christmas decorations were all everywhere. And I look at that as the ongoing gift from my mother, from the other side. And the lesson that my mother gave me was certainly not just a metaphysical roadmap for my life, but a message for everyone. We all have a purpose. We don't always see it right away. Look, mine was a fire hose in the face, so there was nothing subtle about it. But everybody counts. Everybody matters. We all have special gifts, whether you're a great lawyer, a great mathematician, a great doctor, a great cook, maybe just being a great parent. You know, what if you're that good listener? And you listen to that proverbial stranger on the bus who spills his or her guts out to you, and you validate that person so that they don't go home and take a gun to their head. We all have gifts, and that's the gift. The gift is you just be you.
Now, here's a tough question. Should people be scared of dying?
No, because there really is no such thing as death. Death is the cessation of you as an individual, as you as consciousness. But we fear death because we miss the physical. Now, I'm not afraid of death, but what I'm afraid of is the how part. I prefer not to be like eaten by sharks or burned alive and you know, that type of thing. Or, I mean, I watched my dad die from cancer for 18 months, and that was absolutely horrible. And when it got into his brain and he started losing his cognitive, I mean, he was such a brilliant man. And that was the hardest part. Well, it was all hard, actually, but no, people shouldn't be afraid of dying because we're going to an elevated level of consciousness. And I've yet to meet a spirit that said, oh, boo-hoo, I'm dead. What they say is, they always talk about how happy they are, how fast they're able to move and what they're able to do. And so I was asking, you know, people like, well, what do they do? It's very hard for us to understand, very hard. It's impossible for us to understand what it's like to be an infinite being that's part of the collective consciousness. Why? Because for whatever reason, we're supposed to temporarily be in this finite form. And the brain, while it did not create our consciousness, it hosts it. And the brain is geared specifically for finite limited perception. It appears that we're able to have experiences in this limited form that we can't when we are in a purely infinite, purely energetic state. And it appears also that the things that we go through, including and mostly the horrible things, which has a direct relationship to the frequency that we go into when we transition. Because I remember like Neil Donald Walsh, everything's groovy, everything's happy, you die. And I'm sorry, but I don't subscribe to his perceptions of things, because everything isn't, yes, we leave this world and we're devoid of pain and all that, but Osama bin Laden doesn't go into the same frequency that Mother Teresa did. There is a whole myriad of frequencies. And this, once again, Katrina, gets tied into the reincarnation issue. So, you know, Mother Teresa may not have to come back. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. I have a feeling Mr. Bin Laden's going to be back. And he's not going to be rich next time.
Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, this has been one of the greatest pleasures of our podcasting history. And just want to thank you so very, very much for taking part.
Thank you, Katrina. It's been an honor. I look forward to returning. Many blessings.
Thanks for listening to Primetime Crime, the podcast. Follow us on Facebook at Primetime Crime and on Instagram and Twitter at PrimetimeCrime_. Post your comments and tell us what true crime stories you'd like to hear about. Subscribe to Primetime Crime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Podcasts. Thanks a lot.